Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic community. My name is Matt, and joining me is a guy who will always, always go for that last hush puppy. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
There is no school like old school. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 202, Radio On, is brought to you by bite-sized Old Lay snacks. Because who are we to judge the dietary habits of a homeless dinosaur?
Indeed, Pete, and here we are continuing to make our way through Runaways Season 2. Also on our pop culture podcast feed, we had our Aquaman review drop yesterday. We have some holiday stuff coming in the next couple days. Pete, what will be in that pop culture podcast stocking?
That, of course, Matt, Once Upon a Deadpool, where we have made a donation to F Cancer. We are challenging all of our listeners to make a donation to Ryan Reynolds and F Cancer.
Indeed, we are, and we will be sharing news of those who have donated along with us in that Once Upon a Deadpool podcast on Christmas Eve. Then Christmas Day, the pop culture podcast feed will have a rerun of our Christmas Story commentary track. Then, Pete, it's all Runaways all the time.
Yes, until it's Star Trek Discovery, and then it's God, Friend, and Me, and then it's The Punisher. So great time to be around these fantastic geek parts. But Matt, what do you say we get to that Runaways recap?
Take it from the top, Pete.
The kids are awakened by an earthquake, and Molly uses her strength to stop a column from crushing Gert. They notice Carolina is missing, and it's apparent this episode picks up immediately after the events of the last, as she's still with Dad Jonah. What started is their journey to a miraculous future. She'll be meeting her family real soon, but she already has one. But this is his family. He asks her for her bracelet and tells her she doesn't need anything to control her power. It's within her. It is her. She struggles at first, but manages to shut it down. A search of the hostel turns up empty for Carolina, but positive for rat-sized cockroaches with which Old Lace goes to exterminate. Clearly worried about Carolina, Nico wants to search before she turns up with an alibi about a walk in the woods. The good news is this wasn't the big one, Molly's parents predicted. They want to make sure the dig site is permanently destroyed, and Nico needs the staff of one. Molly and Carolina will accompany her while Chase fixes his fistigons and gets the power up and running. Alex has to head to his job. Molly preaches no more secrets, and Alex discloses he's working for Darius. At Pride Central Command, they've also ascertained this wasn't the earthquake. Jonah hasn't told Leslie anything, as these days he only has eyes for Frank. Tina asks if Janet's heard anything from Jonah about bringing Victor back, which she denies and gets impatient about leaving the meeting. The Wilders stay and continue to search for their children, but Tina demands updates from Jeffrey. How is that co-chair thing working out? Janet brings Jonah Victor's plans for a new box. We get catch-up exposition about how everybody knows she met Victor in grad school, where she was an excellent student as well. Her knowledge on gravitational wave theory is impressive. She's lived in Victor's shadow and gets some overdue credit for something other than her baking. He shows her, Victor, and the quantum field theory and subcellular biophysical processes keeping him alive. She's glad he looks peaceful despite having shot him. But getting a healthy Victor back is her best chance at getting Chase home. She gives him the plans, but Jonah and Victor will take it from there. Nico, Molly, and Carolina exploit a surveillance blind spot to crack open and fry the YZ nerve center to the Minoru's home. Carolina offers to grab Nico some comforts of home, but there's only one thing she wants, as her father realizes they're there. Back at Pride HQ, the Wilders agree since they haven't solved a crime in the first 48 hours, it's time to resort to a new tactic to find their children. Clear the kids of Destiny Gonzalez's murder and give them a false sense of security to show themselves. Lawyer Catherine is going to sit down with Flores to figure out how to manipulate the legal system. After she leaves, Jeffrey gets a call from Janet. Alex arrives at Darius and Tamar's new crib to help move. No ulterior motive to make time with Livy at all. He wants the old computer in the garage for parts. Darius demands he carry Tamar's records voluntarily. Chase finds a Rolls-Royce in the hostel and tells Gert, who is excessively irritated without her meds. Her relationship status is only adding to that, but they have a relationship, which they both want. Nico and Carolina can't find the staff when her dad confronts them, but Mom awaits outside for a three-on-one throwdown that sees Molly end up trapped under ice in the pool to end the act. Carolina can't free Molly with her powers, and Nico tells her mother this monstrous behavior is what caused Amy's death. Her mother hints at a different reason, but Nico says she loves the staff's power more than any of them. Tina offers Nico the staff, but if they leave the next time they meet, they won't be mother and daughter. The girls bounce, and Tina tells Robert she didn't think Nico would take her up on the offer. Robert finds Carolina's inhibitor bracelet and worries about how Nico will use the staff. Molly curls up to recover on the concrete, and Nico notices Carolina isn't wearing her bracelet before they have their first fight. Aw. At Pride HQ, Jeffrey gives Janet the book Jonah gave them to use before their sacrificial rituals. He called it the abstract. It might not be a Jonah encyclopedia, but she thinks it's time they all got more curious. Chase fries the electrical grid for Griffith Observatory. Alex is treated to a home-cooked meal and gets a down payment for his next dirty deed from Darius. Alex and Livy get some private time, and she helps to change his appearance so the cops can't find him. She doesn't believe the stories anyway, and they kiss. A utility truck comes out to fix the blackout. When the utility workers enter the hostel and plan to call the cops to clear out potential squatters, Gert gets Old Lace to growl and frighten them away. But they only think it was a mountain lion. Chase stole fuses from their truck and gets the power back up. He celebrates with protein powder and dirty tap water. Very different from the flask or vape the youth of today usually enjoys, eh? The girls return and they hold a meeting without Alex. They plan to hunker down and use their powers the next day as a team. Nico chooses a room and uses the staff to repair a radio, and Carolina comes in to make up, but not out. Gert goes to check on Molly, even offering to sing her a lullaby, but she's not interested because she's sneaking out. Janet does computer things to Jonah's book and smiles. Catherine finds Jeffrey still at Pride HQ. She tells him Detective Flores told her they have to frame someone else for Destiny's murder. It's not going to be an innocent, though. Just then, Jeffrey's phone rings. Livy has cornrowed Alex's hair, and he gets in a lift. Darius looks down on Alex, leaving as he offers a deal to Jeffrey for his son.
Pete, let's talk about some of the villains in this episode. Surely we must start with Jonah, who continues to appear to be kind of the puppet master in many ways.
Yeah, Julian McMahon, we were talking before we started the podcast here. You know, he's 10 years out from Nip Tuck, but he's only gotten better. And to be the big bad as it is on this show right now, holding it down, manipulating, perpetrating, here getting into the mind of his daughter, the nuggets about who she is and more family that we'll chew over in the theory segment.
He just continues to be a great force on screen. I don't know. There's an easy coolness to him. It's kind of like he's like a friendly shark, Pete. I think of the scenes where he's talking to Janet.
And he's Australian, so he would work very well in Finding Nemo.
Absolutely. He's both complimentary to Janet as well as, I don't know, a bit sneering. And I must confess,
I think menacing, really. Yeah, kind of like, you know, give me what I want. Oh, you're going to put the tablet in your pocketbook? What about I have special glowing powers like the girl and I'm more apt with them? Do you not understand?
I feel like I have a soft spot for him. I know that the two Tim Story, Fantastic Four movies are much maligned, and I will admit that they have not aged great, but I think that they tried to hit a certain tone, and they achieved that tone. And maybe it's a tone that since we've moved on from a bit in terms of being a bit more serious, whether it's, you know, The Dark Knight, or whether it's even more goofy like Thor Ragnarok. But I have a soft spot for those movies, really enjoy him. And I'm glad he's a villainous presence here. Another great villain, maybe not great, another solid villain in this episode, Pete, is Robert, who I suspect, though clearly villainous, I suspect he's a little torn as to how bad he wants to be.
And I think through his inaction, yes, he tries to get Nico to stay, but you know, he was just as futile during the fight, perhaps more so than any other character there.
It'll be interesting to see where things go with him in the future. Let's not forget that that he had stepped outside the marriage in season one, and one really does sense that that with all of the pride, as they're kind of currently aligned and congealed, it does feel like it's a temporary thing because of the nature of the emergency, kids on the run, and kind of the open mystery of what's at the bottom of the pit, which of course then takes us now to Tina, who, I mean, if you didn't think she was a villain already, her declaring essentially, do it my way, or the mother-daughter relationship that nature has bestowed upon us is now severed.
Yeah, but then again, it's the Darth Vader, there's still good in her. It's to her husband, oh, I didn't think she'd take us up on it. You know, nowhere near as effective in terms of manipulation as Jonah. I mean, he's a master at it, and clearly aliens are really good at it. But she's certainly trying. I mean, trapping the youngest of our runaways beneath the frozen surface of a pool in well-to-do Los Angeles, not exactly light stuff.
I know, Pete, it's very shocking to think that anybody who lives in Brentwood could try and kill someone. But
what? In their backyard with something that might require gloves for you to handle that may or may not fit?
Indeed, Pete, indeed.
Jay, or I mean, Matt. Oh, Matt.
I mean, bringing it squarely back to Runaways, it's a stone cold, no pun intended, it's a stone cold killer move to be like, you know, freeze the water, let this girl drown, this, you know, 13-year-old drown. I must admit that I initially thought that the entire thing had been frozen. Okay, fine, they freeze the top. That's a little bit more peril there. A little confused that Molly couldn't simply break through that ice with some sort of, I don't know, super jump.
Yeah, or Carolina's inability with her powers to thaw it, to melt it, to break it. So the staff has some serious powers, even against those of Jonah and Carolina.
Extra ice. Pete, last baddie on the list today is Darius, who we continue to see kind of in this dual light. Really, really buy that he's trying to build some sort of stable existence for himself and his family. But then, of course, it seems that he's still getting into bad things.
You want to like him. And then he makes the phone call at the end of this episode. You know, he performs these lines with seeming menace. And then, you know, oh, I'm just kidding, Alex. It's all good. Yeah, he's an interesting character, and I can definitely see why they kept him around, apart from the here is Jeffrey's link back to the hood. And he's become, and his storyline has become interesting in its own right. So I'm really glad. And they don't play it off as a stereotype. He is three-dimensional. He's starting a family. The girlfriend is aware of his illegal activities, complicit in them. And now you add this dynamic of Livy, and there's, beyond their child they're expecting, there's a sense of peril.
Actor Devon Nixon really, as you said, Pete, adds such sympathy and such likability to the character. And the show is better for it to have him there, to adding that dimension, because I think it would be all too easy for him to merely be a bad guy, for him to merely be kind of like a thug from the hood and kind of more stereotypical, but instead we're getting those layers. But Pete, let's now talk about some theories here. And here's one question I'd like to pose to you, particularly because I think it's a little, maybe it's a finger wag at the writing, maybe it's not, but is Jonah's reminder to Janet that some folks forgot you're really smart, is that Jonah speaking to the audience or speaking to the show itself?
I would propose, as I did in the recap, not only is it exposition reminding us that she is science-minded and capable in her own right, that he's letting her know he knows that. And I think it's also fodder for where the story is going, given what she's doing with the book later on in the episode.
Switching over now to her son, stealing power from the grid, is it that easy if you're just really smart? Do you need like specialized tools, some of those big like insulated gloves? Do you need like electric company keys to open those box things? I don't know, Pete. I'm not electrical engineering smart. Explain to me.
Here is all you need. You need video of the Griffith Observatory either turning on its lights or turning them off towards morning. And then you play it, and then you play it in reverse. And voila, you have both caused power to fail and then given it back.
Pete, is Carolina's family, as foretold by Jonah, going to be the creature/creatures in the hole?
I mean, he says her family, he references his family. She draws a line there that she's already got one. I mean, he's got to be related to these things down there. We've been told they're sentient, that they're communicating. Size is something that seems to be, not to their scale. So is this grandma and grandpa? Is this a whole bunch? Who knows? I really love the slow burn they've set with that, rather than, oh, here and here is Nebulon and Zebulon, your space relatives, and we will now go to space in the center of the Earth.
Pete, random Rolls-Royce, a writerly reason to re-equip the Runaways? Will they take the car and turn it into loot for the forthcoming episodes?
They need a ride, and he can fix electrical stuff. So I thought that was a pretty clear direction that they're heading into. Back to Carolina for a moment. So the family stuff, and now the lack of a need for her to wear her bracelet as an inhibitor, something I'm kind of surprised they did, because it, in theory, could have been a way to track her. But now she's able to do this. So turns out, Matt, all you need to do is think really hard and you can stop yourself from glowing. Something to remember next time you've been working for like 10 hours straight.
Believe in yourself.
Janet and this abstract book, Matt, and the strange alien holographic language. Because all you need to do is look at stuff and you can tell what it is, right?
Well, I think she was using advanced hologram computer to try and make sense of it all. It's what you do nowadays on TV, Pete. You can't do the old CSI zoom and enhance. You can't do the decoding kind of, you know, progress bar. You got to have the 3Ds.
How about Nico taking leadership of the group? Alex not there.
You know what? You snooze, you lose. I know Alex is out there, A, trying to get some cabbage, B, trying to get to know a lady friend a little bit better. But I think Nico is an able leader. I think, too, you know, there's kind of the joke on Runaways that everyone's powered except for Alex. So I guess, therefore, he's the leader. And you know what? Nico is maybe the most powerful one. I mean, I guess we don't fully know the extent of Carolina's powers. We also don't fully know the extent of how Nico can wield the staff. But I think she's a great candidate for leadership.
Absolutely. And I think given the rapport she has with all of the Runaways puts her, you know, Alex and Chase not getting along, that fight for male dominance as, you know, statistically minorities within the group is interesting that, you know, yeah, I get it in the comics. Alex kind of sets himself up in that situation. And again, is the only non, you know, powered, if you will. I mean, Chase uses the gauntlets. He doesn't have powers himself, but I think it's an interesting dynamic. How about Molly, Matt? Is she an Avenger now?
Pete, I love that we see her stepping up. I mean, this is not currently a team of, it's not like a superhero team. You know, these are scared teenagers on the run. Many of them have powers of some sort, whether it's mechanical or organic. But I just like that kind of she's had enough as the little kid in this group, and she's going to go out, pull that mask down, and avenge crimes. Or I'm not quite sure what's next, but she's going to go out there and do it.
Can she be a West Coast Avenger?
Let's bring it on. Absolutely. That is if Kevin Feige is okay with it. Jenny Fleck.
And lastly, Matt, from me, who are the Wilders possibly going to frame?
I think they're going to frame Tina. I think that it's killed two birds with one stone. Yeah, absolutely.
I was kind of being facetious there. I mean, Darius just happened to call. Darius has their son, wants to make a deal. I think there's going to be an old bait and switch there, and suddenly he's going to be holding the bag for Destiny Gonzalez's murder.
Certainly something that could support your theory is the fact that Darius has the gun with quote-unquote DNA, I think meant to be fingerprints, on it that linked to Alex. I'm just imagining kind of a writerly chess match where it's like, oh, well, now we have you, Darius. Oh, no, well, I have Alex, or I have the goods on Alex, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the gun makes it more likely that that's going to be a story route that they go, but I don't know. So, Pete, I will cede to you the possibility that that's going to happen, but I still like my theory that that Catherine really is zeroing in on let's take out Tina and resolve these other problems.
Well, speaking of the goods and DNA, Matt, the DNA of Fantastic Geek is the good people that go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek and help us pay for things like bandwidth and storage in our massive backlog of every single Marvel Cinematic Universe TV show, episode, and movie.
Pete, it's the time of year where there's the Yule log, and now you're talking about the backlog, and you know what? The goal is for both to burn bright, to burn hot, to burn long, and it's all made possible by the people who go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Pete, there's actually a freebie up there right now tied to the Marvel, Marvel Cinematic Universe, but tied to a Marvel movie. There's a freebie there. You don't even need to give in order to get that MP3 freebie. All I will say is prepare to have a fantastic time with Roger Corman.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content from there, Matt. There's all sorts of levels. There's even get a hair follicle from Pete and make your own spoiler Pete level. It's a little expensive, but it's there.
Well, Pete, let's now flip to some feedback about what's going on for Marvel's Runaways. And I think we have some special feedback.
We do. Play that audio from our man, Fred, in the Netherlands.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Runaways, Season 2, Episode 2. I did manage to watch the first two episodes, so I can give some audio feedback for this episode. I really have to say I had to get used to Runaways a little bit, because I just watched a lot of Daredevil and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then this Runaway show is, of course, a little bit of another order. So the first episode gave me a bit of a silly, cheesy idea. But getting into the spirit of it, this second episode is much better for me. Since you spoke about that you cover all Marvel series, I want to ask you an honest question. If you want to put this show, The Runaways, in your order of shows, where would Runaways be? For me, it's a nice show because it's not very much into the MCU timeline, which I try to follow. I have to make you a compliment about your consistency because I'm now watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, where I'm at episode 14. And if I listen to you then, which is 2014, and I listen to your last Runaways podcast, it's quite the same, I have to say. And very nice. Your kind of analysis is always very consistent and very thorough and very nice. So, very short remarks about this episode. First point, Levi and Alex kissing.
By what episode will Alex and Levi have kissed?
Let's see, 13 episode season. They're going to kiss maybe at the... I'm going to be real specific, Pete, and I know nothing beyond this episode. They're going to kiss at around the three-quarter mark, so around the 35-minute mark of episode 203 or 4. I'll say 4.
Well, I think it was a little earlier than episode 4, and actually it was episode 2, 33 minutes and 3 seconds into the episode. Another point I picked up, when... All the runaways, except from Alex, were sitting at the table in their shelter. It was, and perhaps it's because it's almost Christmas, very reminiscent for me to the Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci. I posted a comparison on the Facebook page. I think the episode had a little too much of cuddling and kissing, but as compensation, there was a very, very nice fight at the pool of the Wilder family. Okay, that was all for this time. Greetings. Till tomorrow. Fred from the Netherlands.
Always great to hear from Fred, Pete. I agree with him that the staging there of that, you know, when the Runaways minus Alex were at the table, definitely was reminiscent of The Last Supper. I guess we could get maybe into some sort of meta-analysis down the line, you know, who's Christ, who's this one, who's that one. Pete, maybe this all ties into the Da Vinci Code. Maybe it's going to reveal that Dan Brown is actually behind, I don't know, behind the MCU, but... even if it was just kind of done for in the moment artistic reasons, you know, like, I mean, like not long-term artistic, just, hey, this will look great. It's a great look, Pete. It's a winning look.
Absolutely. And, just a side-by-side comparison that, he was able to show us, with, Da Vinci's Last Supper. Really, really cool. I love me some Runaways, Matt. I told you, I know I told our listeners here how effortless it felt to get back into this show back when we watched the season two premiere all the way at New York Comic Con in the fall. And, you know, I had forgotten how much I enjoy this show, but thinking, as, you know, Fred points out, of all of the shows that they've done, you know, what my favorite would be, I can't speak for Matt, but, you know, there's just something about the loyalty to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and particularly with the Netflix ones getting shut down seemingly one by one. You know, we've lost Daredevil now. We won't lose Punisher and Jessica Jones before their second and third seasons air respectively, and then I'm sure they'll be shuttered as well. So it's hard to go with a Netflix one since they're being shut down. I mean, with a season six coming, with a season seven already guaranteed, and being the OG there, Matt, I have a really hard time not saying it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And tremendous compliment from Fred, who, you know, serious analysis here, going back and listening to those older ones, and, you know, that we've produced that consistent product. Thank you.
I find it a little difficult to rank all of these shows on the same list, I think, because their tonalities are different. I think that most Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, most Runaways episodes, are easier to digest than, let's say, Punisher. You know, I think back to that first season of Punisher where, in addition to, in my mind, them not kind of overly glorifying violence, gun violence, things of that sort, but still kind of, you know, getting in violence and gun violence in a way that somehow was not kind of unpalatable towards the current kind of gun situation and whatnot. You know, Punisher exploring topics such as what it's like after veterans come home and reacclimate themselves to society. We had, you know, kind of the terrorist pressure cooker bomber kind of aspect. So it was a much more serious show. Runaways is more fun. I don't want to automatically say, but Punisher digs a lot deeper. I mean, you think of some of the Jessica Jones arcs talking about sexual assault and coming back from that. So I don't want to mislabel those more challenging shows as better or worse just because Runaways is easier. I think Runaways is very, very high on the list in terms of being able to engage with these characters and so many characters. As we've said before, it's not only the kids, it's the parents, where we all kind of have a read on who they are. I would definitely put Runaways pretty high on the list. I think as well, you have to think about, you know, whether you want to call it Netflix bloat or whatever it is, there definitely have been seasons of those Marvel Netflix shows where there was too much story, or pardon me, there were too many episodes for the story that they were looking to tell. That has not happened on Runaways, and I think that therefore has to elevate it, because whether you're doing something lighter or darker or whatever it is, it needs to fit the story shoebox that you have. And if this is going to, you know, if this season is 13 episodes, I hope we have a 13-episode season, or, you know, whether first half, second half, whatever it is, I hope it fits that episode count and isn't just like, you know, Oh man, remember episodes 6, 7, and 8 where they're like, oh no, look for burgers for the entire episode. It's a waste of time.
Really want to compliment Fred too on his impressions of you and me.
Pete, I think that might have been audio from the last podcast and not Fred doing voices.
Wait a minute. So wait. We just ran audio of somebody who left us audio of us. If that's not the snake eating its tail, I don't know what it is.
It's the modern world, Pete. It's the way things are.
Take us to Twitter, Matt. What are people saying over there?
Pete, first tweet is from @runaways_fans saying that they cannot wait for our podcast to get cooking here. And here it is cooking, Pete. Also, some questions from our pal @DJBlack. That's DJ_BLAK357. Just asking what exactly is the recording schedule that we're doing. Got back to him. Good opportunity to remind everybody we are recording ahead of, you know, at a faster pace than we are releasing these, just with holiday stuff in the on the horizon there. So, you know, if you want to send us feedback, feel free to, you know, just in email and Facebook and Twitter, whatever it is, just say which episode you're talking about, and we'll certainly share it in due course. And similarly excited for Runaways is Henry David. That's @FunLordHenry, who says, sounds like I can squeeze in the whole series and podcast for the remaining school break on my official TV show record. So yeah, it's all there to binge.
So great to hear from so many people who enjoy this show. And, you know, I know a lot of people on social media are sharing. There's all sorts of suggestions. Go on the Rotten Tomatoes and to leave reviews and to have that social media conversation. A lot of fingers have been pointed in terms of social impression with the Netflix cancellations, so cannot hurt to really leave that social footprint when it comes to enjoying Runaways season 2.
Absolutely. And one more tweet, Pete, almost forgot to mention it, but short but sweet from Court. That's @JenDeve, who says, can't wait to listen. Pete, it might be right now. Court is listening to her saying she can't wait to listen, but now she is listening, and here we are with the snake eating its tail again.
Only if she sends audio of her listening for our next podcast can we top what happened before.
Pete, as we make our way through Runaways season 2, how can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J-K-L-R, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,254 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word with the PH. The thumb cost you nothing, so do it today.
Pete, as mentioned before, we have a whole lot of goodies hitting the Pop Culture Podcast feed as this week continues, as this holiday week continues. But if you're focused here on Runaways, we will be back on Wednesday talking episode 203 as we continue to run through this season. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
I did that? I want to do it again. The car was impounded. There was no way for me to avoid being grounded. My parents had to come off a vacation to get me.